It's Thursday, July 24th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 109 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 6 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, the podcast that always starts off with a four-letter F word. My name is Dan.
Really?
Fear? Yeah, I guess fear. Yeah.
Actually, it starts with welcome. But my name is John.
And my name is Pat.
And Chad's trying to dodge introducing himself again. So his name is Chad.
I always try and do something clever for the folks at home.
We just have one quick announcement, two parts. Gen Con?
Two announcements, two parts.
Oh, what's the first announcement?
Age of Conan.
The Age of Conan Guild has migrated from the PvP server Stormrage over to the PvE server Set. So if you were interested in picking up Age of Conan or gaming with us and did not want to game on a PvP server, then here's your chance to stop by and join us, because we are now on a player versus environment server. There is player versus player fighting, but only by consent in certain places at certain times. So if that was a reason you never joined us before, stop by the forums and be sure to check it out now.
Yeah, the paper burn of intensity of interest at the beginning of that PvP clan has done gone and burned out. Yeah. So now my colleagues here are starting a slow, sustainable guild on PvP.
Yeah, yeah. John's absolutely right. You know, when we started the PvP server, it was like 40, 50 people signed up. Like, yeah. And then their free month ran out, and then there was three of us.
Well, to be fair, as one of the people that left as soon as he showed up, the game is extremely clunky and outright unfinished in its present state.
And they are improving. You know, to counterpoint this, because I still do play, they are making a lot of improvements. I have to be completely honest, it is not the next gen MMO that they promised it would be in any way, but it is a current generation MMO that is extremely good. So
yeah, and as Chad said, they've put a lot of polish on it. I mean, even recently, they've done a lot of upgrades to the UI, to some of the quest areas. So it's the kind
of enjoying it myself. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it. It has a lot of potential for the future. Is it a perfect product? No, absolutely not.
No.
But
I was hoping and praying for Reds versus Blues style Ultima Online and the current Asian game PvP stuff, wherein group faction of player fighting and player looting and all this stuff was going to be really cool and really tense, but it's just WoW ganking times 10.
Yeah.
So
wasn't
PvP excited.
The PvP part was awful. Yeah. So that, which is why we made a switch over to PvE.
Yeah. If I had known that the PvP was going to be as boring and stupid as it was, I would have never rallied to go on a PvP server.
And the community is different too. It's like on the PvP server, it's all hardcore low. I'm going to gank your mother and, you know, leak backstabbing, ha ha ha, we got you, to Set, where it's just like, hey, I noticed that you needed some help, and I was doing this quest over here that takes me 5 hours, but I stopped it because I noticed that you need some help. Do you want some help? And, you know, they help you for the next 10 hours.
And I'm fine with the wall backstabby crowd. Yeah. I'm not quite as rude about it, but that's pretty much what I am myself. But
that works for Team Fortress.
No
for me,
consequences to PvP.
None.
Other than causing irritation, and everyone's out to do that, it's stupid, and you go back to playing Warcraft.
Yep.
Two things about Gen Con. First off, be sure to check your Gen Con schedule, because Fear the Boot is going to be on several panels, and we are also going to be doing a live recording of the show on Thursday, I believe from 2 to 5, obviously Indianapolis time. So if you want...
Are we going to fix that this year?
Yeah, this year. Well, I got to talk to you guys about that, because we're going to have to leave earlier this year because we need to get there in time for our own recording.
Because I don't get up before 9, dude.
So, you'll be fine then.
Oh, okay.
So just don't get up before 2 that are going to be having trouble.
That's your problem.
Fortunately, or rather unfortunately, I can't make it this year, so I still can sleep till 3:30.
But Fear the Boot's going to be doing a bunch of panel stuff up there. I will try and post a link to the schedule, so if you want to go out and check out when you can meet up with us. And also, we are still doing a social gathering, I believe, on Thursday night. And once again, I will post a link to that in the show notes.
Gotta buy some cigars.
So you guys, I hope if you're going to be at Gen Con, you will stop by and say hi on Thursday night.
Dude, Cigar Smoker is talking about coming to the next Fear the Con.
I know, I saw that.
I told him I'd bring the bourbon if he brought the cigars.
And he said yes.
Yep.
I gotta tell you, Cigar Smoker is my new favorite hero, by the way.
You know, actually, something we should probably do before we get into the show here is explain who Pat is.
Who? Oh, hey, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Oh, hey, who?
What?
Chris is still out of town. Well, still out of town. He actually went out of town this week. Last week, he had his daughter's birthday or some such crap.
And he was busy preparing the episode 100 preview that is now posted on the site. But, oh, no. There's an episode 100 preview on the site. You can't argue that.
He is out of town right now. And that's not the reason we have Pat, but that's just to explain where Chris is. But, Chad, do you want to explain who Pat is? And
well, we are, you know, expanding the whole Fear of the Boot concept. And, you know, we're doing a portal site. We're also, you know, reducing the amount of Fear of the Boot shows that come out a month. But we're increasing the amount of podcasts we do to equal out an equal amount of podcasts that we release each month, one a week. There you go. Pretty simple. One of the podcasts we're going to do is called Brain On. And we are going to record the first episode of Brain On tonight. And Pat is going to be one of the hosts on Brain On. And he was here anyway, and we don't want him to sit around bored, and he's a gamer. And Pat, tell us about yourself.
Well, like you said, I've been gaming since I was in high school. Actually, it's when I first started. So that's been quite a while for me now. You know, about 20 years, I guess, I've been gaming.
Without Chris here, are you the oldest man on the mic?
Yes, he is.
I believe I am. I'm 34.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm the old man in my social circles.
Yes. So
well,
what
on
got
that depressing
you,
note.
What got you into gaming?
Actually, like I said, in high school, I believe it was my sophomore year. It was actually in gym class. There were two guys. Well, actually, my best friend and I were there, and we met this other guy in gym class. And I believe he saw that my friend was reading the Dragonlance Chronicles. This is telling you when it was. I was in high school in the 88 to 92 timeframe. So Dragonlance was big.
Yeah.
So Todd was reading those, and I had started reading them because he badgered me until I would. He's like, "Oh my God, you've got to read these. They're so awesome." So
your friend
I was
Todd is a
too.
Dick.
So we were reading those, and then this third guy, he saw us reading those. He goes, "Oh, hey, you like fantasy, whatnot?" He goes, and the talk basically progressed to, you know, "Hey, have you ever role played?" We're like, "No." So it all started there. So my first GM was Phil. And
not the Phil.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say.
Actually, yeah. It was actually PW. His name's PW. He went, you know, the initials. I played under him consistently and solidly for about 6 years.
Not bad.
Yeah. And well, and that's the thing. I have a, and we'll probably get to this tonight. I have a very different experience, I think, with role playing, because I have played in a campaign that was ongoing, that started and it still is really there.
Wow.
It never ended.
So you've been gaming for like 20 years and have been basically playing one campaign?
Well, I've played a lot of others. Okay. I've played a lot of campaigns, but like this one didn't start and end. And so I had never, and that's what I was used to. I have two actually campaigns that I had played in that were still, they're out there. I mean, they're stagnant now. We're not playing, obviously, but the characters are still there. They're not, it never ended and they didn't die. Whatever.
And if somebody gets a burp their butt and everyone's free, you could just pick
exactly.
it up.
Yeah, we've
actually,
heard of people who will go split to the four winds at the end of high school or college, and then once a year we'll just have gaming weekend and play in their 20-year-old game.
It's interesting you say that. My friend Todd, he lives in Phoenix now, and he runs the other campaign that I'm in. And it is ongoing, and we will do that every year or two when
That's
we
awesome.
Are able to. We'll travel out to Phoenix and have a gaming weekend.
We're not as foreign to the ongoing campaign concept as you might think. At least Chad and I aren't. Because recently
I am. My games are disposable and forgettable. I
just
burn
like
their
your
pictures
women.
At the end. You caught that. Very good, Dan.
I know recently we do mostly these relatively short campaigns that occur over the course of at most a couple months. And then we move on to something else. But going back, our first campaign, that Star Trek campaign, went on for years.
Did it really?
Yeah. And then if you remember after the
No,
battle,
I don't remember.
We had a Battletech game with a Mercenary Corps.
That went on for years?
That went on for like several years.
See, I don't remember any of this. So, I try and block high school out because it's really terrible.
Well, I mean, you think even about the campaigns we had with like the group in the basement where like you were playing your cyborg guy and everything. Those went on for a long time too. Yeah. It's really been recently that our campaigns have become so quick and disposable.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, Chad, your mutation of the Silver Snakes game is absolutely the longest campaign I've ever played in. And that lasted, a year and very light change, maybe 14 months.
That's amazing that I find it amazing that I could even stretch that out for a year.
And you didn't even get to the end of it. Yeah. That farted out. You didn't conclude the campaign at all.
Yeah, I think we did a, you know, everybody is like, okay, we're kind of done with this. Yeah. And it was like, okay, we're going to switch over to this next campaign, but at least let me tell you the ending. And everyone, we sat, I think, if I remember right, now correct me if I'm wrong, we sat around for like an hour, and I just told the story of what happened.
I don't think that lasted for an hour, but I think it did last for 10 minutes, and I do recall you doing it. We actually lost.
Yeah.
You had the guy that we were dodging the entire time occupy our home base plates and hold a gun to our commander's head, and that was where it cut.
Mm-hmm.
Someday I'm still have to run that campaign and straighten it out.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. All right.
But of course, that might segue into player revolts, because I think somebody else in that group mentioned a great game idea they had.
Yeah.
I don't think it was me, but that's how you can destroy one.
Yep. Well, we'll get to player revolts here in a second, but before we
players.
Well, actually, we're right there. Go ahead, Dan.
Before we get into player revolts, there's something that I'd like to do over the next couple weeks, and this is not going to be a fixed segment. We're just going to do this as a segment for a little bit. We here on the show...
Right after Gamer Closet.
Right. Well, we have no Glamour Closet this week. All the gamers are back in the closet, so... But one thing that I would like to do on the show, because we have in the past talked about good GMing techniques. We have talked about what we've done over the years that has worked and not worked. We've talked about how we as GMs all have a radically different style of running our games, but we have never, I don't think, ever explained how any one of us actually comes up with and writes a game. In fact, I'm almost positive
we write a game.
Well, right.
Chad, what are you trying to say?
Well, but even then, I mean, I have some process questions about that. But we've never explained how it is we sit down with a completely blank slate and go from that to having a ready-to-run game by whatever processes we choose. And like I said, I'm 99% sure we never have, because at Fear the Con, there were people asking me for my GM notes out of curiosity. And even there, I didn't have really...
No one asked me for my GM notes.
Well, that's...
People just picked up my GM notes and read them.
And stole them. And, like,
I didn't even... Yeah, they kind of did. They put them back, but...
After they put them down their pants?
Or? They were there for everyone. The game was over in like 2 hours.
Now, Pat, you were at Fear the Con. Were you doing all War Machine stuff, or did you get away from the War Machine?
I was all War Machine that day, so I did not get a chance to play any other things.
Yeah, there were a couple of enclaves, and you War Machine guys were one of the big ones.
Yes, yeah.
Big, awesome one.
Well, no, it was excellent. Great. We were happy as hell to have you there. But
then they were happy as hell to drink all the beer, too.
Yeah, you guys were drunk just like we are. But you should really take a breath and, you know, role play every once in a while.
For this week, I'm going to go ahead and put myself in the hot seat for the simple reason I gave nobody else sufficient advance warning to
actually... I can talk about my stuff.
Do you want to go first then, Chad?
I can.
All right, Chad, let's start with you then. I will go next week.
Okay.
And then we'll have John 3 weeks after that, unless you're... No, you'll still be around by then.
Yeah, that's exactly how long I have. That will be my send-off as a permanent Fear the Boot host.
I'm just John GM. That's the big hurrah.
Yes.
And John will be back, by the way. He's just going to be not on
us
regularly.
No, we're sacrificing him to Zool.
School.
Yeah, so, I'm going to see how much I can. We're going to look into remote recording like we do with Chris, but I won't be on every week like I am now.
Right, because the law school is a bitch.
Yeah, first year law school, not a party. Those exams in December are going to pretty much determine my job, so I don't want to screw those up.
All right, well, that being the case, then, John, maybe we'll do you next week just to make sure we don't screw up on the timing and lose you. So you be ready for next week's episode, and then I'll go after that, and somewhere in there we'll make Chris go. We'll check his AARP card.
Now,
and
how do you want to do this, Dan? Do you want to do like a Q&A? Actually, if you do a Q&A...
Let's do that. All right, Chad, could you introduce real quickly what you think your GMing style is in terms of how you write the game, not how you run the game.
Because everyone knows I run low rules and stuff, but that's not...
Right. But how do you write the game?
Yeah. As minimal as you are, there are NPCs and locations and goals. How do you come up with those?
I would hope you guys perceive plots and layers too, but...
Let's start even with that.
Yeah.
I'm someone who comes... And we've talked about how you can come to a game with too many notes, and that's what I've been guilty of in the past. But even today... I will still come to a game with several pages of notes. I mean, not a binder of notes, but a couple pages of notes.
How many notes have I come to for the past two games?
Yeah, none. In fact, at the last game, I was writing down, two or three games ago, I was writing down proper nouns, like the names of people we were running into. Mm-hmm. And at the next game, Chad steals my clipboard and starts using that as his notes to GM from. Yeah. So,
in fact, one of the players was like, I'm like, I hope I don't make any of you guys nervous by not having any notes in front of me. And he's like, and one of Josh was like, actually, dude, you are making me a little nervous. And so I took a clipboard with a blank piece of paper with the directions to Dave's house on it, and I put that in front
of me. Dude, GM screen. It's the best $7.95 you can spend in D&D because people assume whatever they want to assume is beyond that or whatever scares them.
I've got nothing to hide. So
exactly. That's the terrifying
part. Let's start with that. Chad's technique and what makes him so distinct from the vast majority of GMs out there.
I am a beautiful, unique snowflake.
You are in a great big snowdrift. But what makes you so unusual, this card, not certainly unique, but unusual, is the fact that you use absolutely no notes at all.
None.
And I
don't even do notes beforehand, like, oh, I'm going to sketch some stuff out, and I just don't bring the notes with me. What I do, first off, I mean, from the genesis of it, is like, okay, I can pretty much run anything. What do you guys want to play? Because I am not a person who comes up with ideas very well. It's very hard for me to think up an original idea, to think up something new. But what I can say is my strength creatively is that I take other people's ideas that they have that are partially developed or not quite there, and I can really take off with them. I can really take those ideas and work with them. And I'm not saying that they're good, bad, or ugly, but that's just how my creative process works.
Well, I mean, that's gaming.
Yeah.
Gary Gygax did that to J.R.R. Tolkien, and here we are. How many hundreds of thousands of Star Wars tabletop games have there been?
Yeah. So I'll get with my group and I'll say, okay, what do you guys want to play? And invariably they always ask me, well, what do you want to run? And I'm like, anything. I can do anything. I just need I need for you guys to kind of fire that starting gun to kind of get me off. What do you guys want to play? And, you know, we worked through like this last one. We talked about fantasy a little bit. We talked about, you know, possibly doing, and I'm like trying to guide the group to do something more modern because the guys have tended to only, with the exception of Dan, have tended to only do fantasy stuff. And in fact, one of our players has only ever really done fantasy stuff to any real extent. And I really wanted to challenge him. So that was kind of my goal, is that I wanted to challenge the guys with something that was possibly sci-fi or modern day, or at least out of the medieval period, for God's
sake. You can use the GM stick in that situation. You don't want to force a plot down your characters that they really don't want. But you can show up and say, okay, I'm the guy who's running this, and I'm not running swords and sorcery this time. Let your discussion start from there.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I took it up. Not quite a hard line, but that was definitely the implication.
Okay, so the GM bug bites you.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do then is you kind of look to the group.
Pull the players, yeah.
Yeah, see what it is they want to run. So let's say that we're sitting around right now, and we tell you the first book my eyes land on is a D&D book, which is
Earthshaker. Yeah. So that's a big no.
That's a little too assistive.
We'll use what we're running now. You a cyber shadow run game.
A cyberpunk game, yeah. a neuromancer.
Right. Cyberpunk 2020.
Hard cyberpunk.
Yeah, and we're not talking rules, because I really could care less about the rules. It's the genre, the setting, the whatever. And everyone's like, and so we come to this consensus of a cyberpunk game. And so I'm like, okay, let's start talking about characters. You know, here's all the stuff I know about cyberpunk. Here's all this cool stuff. What do you guys want to play? How can we start connecting the characters? And then those guys start creating this story that involves and interlinks their characters, which is really useful for any GM, whether you're my style or anybody's style, because it gets the party interconnected.
Yeah.
And that's my goal right there.
Template or no group template.
Yeah.
Do not have the scene where they all just meet in a tavern and then go.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm kind of working with and working at. And so what I do is I start thinking about, okay, so those are the characters, and this is what they're like, and this is kind of what they'll work with. Okay. And then over the course of the next week, I start thinking not of long involved plots and layers and you know, intrigue and stuff. I start thinking of cool scenes, like totally random scene. A guy fights a cyborg. Okay, that's cool. Okay, that's pretty neat. Or the team comes across this, you know, piece of data that they have to get. Okay, that's kind of cool. Or they come across this character or something that they're doing, something active. And I start thinking of these things that aren't related to anything. They're just scenes, just random set scenes. And I think of like, okay, those are really cool. Those are really neat. And so I have this library of scenes in my head. And then I start thinking, okay, how can I start interrelating them? How can I, without railroading, without saying, okay, you know, you can only go over to here, you can only go to this scene, how can I get the players and motivate them and tell a story that will get them to that scene in a way that makes sense in a way that they would want to do it. And
have you ever had an issue? Because this is something that's happened to me. Because like you, I mean, we have radically different GMing styles. But like you, I've had some times where I come up with these really kick-ass scenes. Man, it'd be badass to have this situation where they're like this, and the enemy's like this, and this is going on. But I've sometimes found that when I sit down to actually run the game, those end up falling kind of short. That they're these great standalone ideas that I really can't work into the plot as well as I thought I could, or they don't occur as dramatically as they occurred in my mind.
Oh, totally.
And what do you do with scenes like that?
Generally, what I do is I try to get through them quickly because in actuality, they turn out to be boring. So I kind of shuffle them away, and then I could bring them back later and rework them. And the thing about having these big separate scenes is that if you're loose enough, if you can think quick enough, what you can do is you can not railroad the players, and whatever direction they choose does not, like, you have scene A, B, and C. Any direction they choose leads you to A. To me, that's railroading. They can choose any direction they want, and if the direction lends itself to go to A, B, or C, I let them go to A, B, or C. And I work with that. And that's the thing about it, is that if they're doing scene A and it's not quite working out, then I can flush scene A, and then I can substitute in scene B without the players noticing, because the players don't know what scenes I have in my head, and let them just do scene B, which is hopefully cooler. I mean, sometimes it's not, because we all have bad games. And then that gives me another week to rework scene A into something unrecognizable, or flush it entirely, or go from where the players are going. Because I'll have 5 or 6 scenes in my head, and the players go in one direction, and then I flush 2 or 3 of those because they no longer apply, or I rework them. And then 2 or 3 new scenes come up based on what those characters are doing. But the game, the major part of my gaming session, is not the scene that I had played out. To me, it's the getting to the scene.
Now, how do you structure a whole campaign? Because if I sit down to run a campaign, and I've got notes. Once again,
procrastinate.
Not encouraging railroading.
Oh, I'm serious.
But still having some idea of generally where this is headed. Here's the story that's unfolding. How do you run that from game to game if you basically...
I don't create a campaign until after the first game. Because I have all these scenes that are separate, and I don't know what the players are going to do, and I want them to be pretty open to what they're doing.
Hey, no, right there. That's a capital idea. That's something I have actually never thought about. To not even bother writing the campaign.
No end bad guy, no saving the princess from the dragon. None of that.
Yeah.
I want to see where the players are going, and then after they kind of get there that next week, and I've even done it to where it's the second gaming session, and I have no end. This campaign is not going anywhere. They get to the second scene, and then I start like, okay, these are what the characters are like. This is what is cool. This is what is working. And like I said, it's these separate scenes, but the game is not the scenes. The scenes are unimportant. The scenes are just what's cool for me.
Right.
It's what happens in between the scenes that's really neat. And then I start stringing together in my mind, how is this going to work logically? And then by the second game or so, I know what I want to do. I know where I want the players to generally head. And that is kind of how I run it.
John, what were you starting to say?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you in that I had never even thought to not have a story and a set of locations and an ultimate villain with an ultimate really bad thing before I even started. To wait to find out what the players thought was cool, what their characters cared about, and what they cared about.
Oh, it allows you to totally think on your feet. I mean, you have to have a certain mindset for it, I guess. And I'm not saying I'm some super genius. I'm just saying that some people have this
mindset. No, I can see the utility in doing it immediately. I just had never thought of it.
Like the Seasons campaign that we go on and on and on about that I do, you guys figured out by the second or third game my end game plot. You had the whole thing figured out, and you told me. You guys all looked at me, and in a casual conversation, oh, you know how players say, oh, I think this is going to go like this. I think this. Oh, no, you're wrong, because I think this and this.
Do you remember what it was? Because I don't.
Yeah, it was the zombie. The king was going to come back and get revenge on Phil, and It was you guys had guessed that it was a cult that was summoning a dark god that was starting the army, that was starting the army of the undead. And you guys totally called it.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you guys got nothing. And then on the inside, I'm like, holy crap, they figured it out.
Yeah, but the fun part of that game is that none of us really cared about the dark cult. We only cared about each other.
Yeah. And then so I changed it. In mid-game, I switched gears and I changed it to Phil's, the guy that Phil killed was coming back for revenge for the undead and all
that. I can't tell you how many campaigns I've either been in, run, seen, whatever, where the game dies in the first sitting because the first sitting goes so different than what the GM expected that this is really a fascinating idea to me of not having a campaign written at the first sitting.
Yeah.
That just, here's the characters, here's an opening situation or two they might end up in, and then giving yourself enough wiggle room when that game is over, because you don't want to paint yourself into a corner, but give yourself, when you walk away, enough of an open-ended cliffhanger to where you could come back then and now install a campaign. Mm-hmm. Now that you know, okay, these guys are really, really angry at the Klingons, but they don't care about what's going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know how to structure what it is these people are doing.
Do you see why now I don't use any notes? Notes would only hinder how I do it.
Well, at least for the first game.
But let's talk. The thing is if you notice, now I haven't done it yet. We've only done two games, but John knows this. When I do take note, I take notes during the game. I don't do notes and come to the game with
you pass notes during the game like a little schoolgirl.
Yeah.
And it works.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
And I...
That makes it fun.
I write down, that's why your notes were so useful to me. I write down the proper names. I always forget the names. I write down, okay, like this.
That was going to be our next point. You obviously do take some kind of notes, because the one thing you cannot get away from, you cannot think up on your feet, is what has already occurred.
Yeah.
That you cannot change the past.
Yeah, yeah. And so I always forget.
If they know, you can't change it.
Right.
Well, if they don't, you can.
I think one thing that works in your favor is you're going to have two or three players at the table that do remember.
And they'll
there's always
one this is how that happens.
Remembers the proper nouns.
So one of our
players,
I
always make up the names. I'm horrible with names, and I am notorious for this. And when I play, I think it's an alliteration with a name. If it's certainly, you know, some weird name, like there was one time my GM had this uber bad guy and his name was Balagoth. Well, I could never remember that, and I wouldn't ever write the stuff
I could barely
down.
Pronounce it.
Exactly.
Bella Goth was one of the default characters in The Sims. I would never forget that name. But if it was a demon, I would laugh at it.
Oh,
exactly.
Bella Goth. The Goth thing.
Yeah, and you know, it was this huge guy, and he's, you know, he was the big bad and everything, and so we all had to respect him. So I immediately came up with the name Bagel Death, and that was from there on.
Was he your
and
GM's Baron Von Badass? Superhero
projection?
He was
one of them. He was one of them.
Oh, God.
So they will do that kind of thing, and so I'm with names. I'm like, it's Bagel Death, or, you know, you've got all this kind of stuff, so yeah.
I guess the mnemonic I would have used there is Belagoth or whatever. That's the same as bad guy.
Well,
so
true.
I guess you'd be like Bartholomew the Bartender, and you could kind of give yourself sort of cues in all of your names to help you remember them, but that is the one thing you can't get away from, is if you said this happened, or this person has this name, or in your cyberpunk game, this corporation has these quirks or these weaknesses, you can't change that next game without a note really agitating the players.
And the only thing that I do to help me remember names is like,
look at what Dave's writing down.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, like, I just got through reading American Psycho, and the corporation that the guy worked for, his name is PMP.
Oh,
and
perfect.
What's the corp that you guys are going against? It's PMP.
Yeah.
So
I'm never going to go into a stairwell. That's all I'm going to say about that.
So one of the things that I also do is that I want to explore, and this is just for my own amusement, and I don't care if the players catch on to this or not. I want to explore philosophical theme within the game. Like, when I ran you guys through...
It's like every one of your games is Bioshock?
No, it's like this. Like the cyberpunk game that I ran for you, John, and the other guys.
Yeah.
I was exploring the theme of what would an anarchist society truly be like? And you would have the strong, and you would have the weak, and it would organize...
It would be a chase from an AI to a bunch of people for a computer chip.
Yeah.
In which Chad constantly blew balls and then cock-blocked the AI.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it was me.
It's a lot of penis metaphor in that.
Yeah.
Well,
and you guys
I started it. I might as well finish it.
Yeah, look what we're talking into. Anyway,
the Seasons campaign. One of the things I wanted to explore was what would a society be like where magic existed, but the magic was exceedingly subtle, and the power of myth and legend and folktale was actually more powerful and more strong than the actual magic itself.
Yeah.
Not physical power, but like people's belief in it. Like people don't believe that you can throw a fireball because you can't. But you can do some magical sort of wiggling and stuff, but people do believe that you can curse their cow and do all this stuff and do all this, that, and the other.
And we had those competing visions of what was the supernatural. We had Manlina's ranger shaman. We had my priest. And the back and forth between us trying to fight for the hearts and minds of the rest of the player characters was constant.
Yeah, and it was great. That was one of those things where the theme really worked out in my favor. Other times, it doesn't work out at all, and it's just for my personal amusement. But yeah, every single game that I ever run, I try to explore a personal theme, and that's totally just my thing. Like I said, I don't even care if the players get it or not. I'm just trying to explore a concept psychologically within myself.
You know, I think that's still a valid point to make, though, because execution is something we've talked about a lot on Fear the Boot. But one of the I think what's almost as hard as execution, maybe not quite as hard, but almost as hard, is coming up with that initial inspiration of what do I want to occur in this game? Mm-hmm. That I've got these characters, I've got these people, what do I do with them?
Yeah.
And obviously one of the easiest places to draw inspiration from is books or movies. But talking about using a philosophical structure or a speculative fiction situation of what would this be like, a what if sort of question, and using that as the basis for a plot.
Like our current cyberpunk campaign, the theme that I am trying to explore is what is the true nature of artificial intelligence? Like, how does it, like, what is it really beyond just a Turing test?
It's max headroom.
It is. And there's it's total max headroom. That's all. Whenever you guys pick up the phone, everyone's like, hey, guys.
You know, max headroom was not a CGI image.
Yeah, no,
it was a guy done in super makeup to look polygonical.
And did you know in the Max Headroom TV series, the main human character was Max Headroom?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Same guy.
Loved that show. I loved it.
That was a genius show.
Mm-hmm.
I've caught like two episodes of it and gone on Wikipedia and realized that having caught two episodes, I've seen a third of the show.
Yeah. But you should see the whole thing. It is, to me, Max Headroom is, I mean, forget the corniness and the commercials and all that and the datedness of it. To me, Max Headroom is real cyberpunk.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
really gets into the theme.
It's
of
a
cyberpunk.
Little corny, but I would say that
it's dark.
It's vision of what the future looked like from the 80s.
I was going to say,
it's absolutely no more dated or goofy than Blade Runners.
And I think that, like, its statement, every time the show opened up, it had this statement in the front is always the same. And to me, it's like, that is my favorite kind of sci-fi. 20 minutes into the future. Yeah. And it was like, wow, that was, I don't even know if I can explain why I find that statement so cool, but it was because it so was related to me and reality. It wasn't like some sci-fi where the sci-fi is actually magic and it's got huge spaceships.
There was no force. There was no mechs. It was super low tech.
Yeah.
It was a society that,
everything
we could conceivably create in months.
Yes. And to me, that's why I'm just a huge fan of cyberpunk. And that's actually the kind of with a little bit of tweaking, that's the kind of cyberpunk game I'm trying to run. But I'm trying to do it quick and dirty, so I'm even breaking some of my rules, too. But, you know, and it's coming out into a game, I think.
I'm only two sessions into the game, and actually
we didn't game last week, so you're as far as the game has gone.
Well, and I was going to say I've only played under Chad's GM for two sessions now, so it's still really new to me, and I don't know as much as some of these other guys do since they've played more with him. But I would say, just from what I've heard you say today and from what I've experienced, that I would almost call your style sort of a free form. I think that would be a good way to put it, and I like it, and
in particular.
Thank you.
I think you focus on the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the creativity of it and your ability to be able to react and to sort of take these threads that others have started and weave it into a story. That is awesome. And that is a really great thing to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to say that is my wife who mm-hmm. enjoys role playing, but doesn't get to do it very often. She is very much of a storyteller and she's all about the story. So she hates the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't even, if she didn't have to pick up a die, she never would. Mm-hmm. It's about, let's sit down. I mean, she would love to sit down at a table and just have people, you know, maybe go back and forth and tell the story mm-hmm. and come up with it that way. And I think that's kind of what you do.
There's systems for that purely. Amber Diceless comes to
mind. I've never played it and I wouldn't enjoy it personally.
No, I wouldn't.
I love the combat. I do. I like it all. I love the story. I love a great story, but I like the combat.
You know what? I try to put that in there because I know that the guys, like if I just ran the game that I would want to play, no one would have fun except me. So I try to put in the combat and the rules and the dice.
Yeah. A lot of GMs don't really care who's having fun as long as they are. So it's nice that you do.
I would like to tell, and thank you both for kind words. One thing that I would like to talk about too, before we kind of cut out of the segment, is the problems with my style. The fact that I am so unprepared sometimes. Like, I come to a game, and it's all about inspiration for me. It's all about inspiration, story, and spark, and getting those creative wheels going and going, and I really grab onto a concept. And sometimes that does not happen.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say that to you politely. That
That'd be brutal.
Campaigns have died on your watch because 2 weeks in a row, you showed up with nothing and couldn't pull a rabbit out of your hat.
Yeah.
And it was over. The players got disconnected, didn't care.
Whereas if I had, an entire campaign worth of notes, then I'm uninspired and the game might be a little dull, but at least something is happening.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes that inspiration just does not happen. And I'm like, there's a dragon.
Let's play Nintendo.
Do you ever have the problem working noteless of losing focus? That, you know, if
Dan,
you,
how long have you known me?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was a question for the listeners' sake.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you want me to profile you, I can do so.
We could all have a conversation with our knowledge of one another, and it would be very, very abbreviated and difficult to follow.
But, you know, one of the things I look at is IGM, one of the reasons I like notes is because I've always got some vision of where things are headed. And of course, I'll adjust that as the players change things. It's not a railroad. But nonetheless, I have some idea of where this is headed. And there's always, because of that, some sort of focus to where this is going. But if you're just kind of making it up as you go, obviously there is a danger that at some point this whole thing could just kind of be flopping there on the dock. And
that's happened. What I try and do is I try and compartmentalize. I have attention deficit disorder. Some people say is it real? Some people don't. The people say it isn't real.
No one who knows you says it isn't real.
Yeah, yeah. And so what I do to combat this is that I compartmentalize my life. I don't do, long lists of things. I do things one at a time, and I do a bunch of them in order. And then I try and compartmentalize my life to where it's like, okay, my attention span will focus in this. And so I do everything within that framework, and then I move on to a different framework. And gaming, how I run a game, is exactly like that. Like, I will compartmentalize a scene. All of the players are within the scene, and I do the setup, and I let them go, and I am looking at each one of the players. I go around the table, and I'm like, what are the players doing? What are their characters doing? Am I focusing on one? Am I not focusing on another? Is this guy bored? Okay, Pat's bored. Why does Pat get bored? We've been talking for the past hour. Pat, a bodyguard comes in, and he glares at you. What do you do?
And then he drops his pants.
Pat drops trow and lays one out.
That happens a lot with me.
Yeah.
I can't help myself.
That's a natural intimidate check. Fear at a 10-foot radius.
And then, or it's like I look at Dan, and Dan is kind of fiddling with a pin, and he's, when you start eating a lot,
Skinny Dan eats when he's nervous.
I binge eat at every game because for some reason, well, I've got a lot.
Remember
of
the chocolate thing going on last week? It's like, oh my god!
I know. I felt like such a woman. I was a chocolate fiend.
I'm some big fat ass.
Dan, you're 6 inches taller than I am. What do you weigh?
About 160, 170.
Okay, you are a little bit heavier than I am. I thought we might have weighed the same thing at our height disparity. I'm like 150, 155.
But yeah, and it's just like, okay, Dan's not paying attention to what I'm saying. Because you, Dan, are a very, you're totally opposite of me. You're a very, very focused person. So when there's interesting things going on for you, you have this laser in on me. It's like, okay, Dan does not have that laser. He's eating like a, you know, pregnant woman. So it's just like, okay, well, I need to, within the scene, within this compartment, I need to do something for Dan. I have an interesting character come out. I have the NPC look at him. I throw out some mystery. I throw out some hook for Dan. And then it's just like with John, you're my absolute favorite player in the world because I can throw out combat for you, you're happy. I can throw out plot for you, I throw out intrigue, you're happy. And then I can lean over and I can say, John, I'm really sorry. I got focused on these guys. Do you mind? And you're like, hey, babe, I've been there.
It's true.
I'm Johnny G. And
GMing experience will make you not wet your panties if you don't get attention for half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in a group of a greater size than two players, you can't do it.
Like the seven-person group that we used to have. Yeah, you understand.
Yeah, I spent a Battletech game stuck in the mud in my King Crab or whatever, literally unable to make it to the battle because that was the natural consequence of taking such a slow mech and having a crash landing where everyone was everywhere. Yeah. And at the end of the day, Chad apologized, and I said, hey, that's what happened in the story.
I felt terrible because it's like John got no spotlight, and just logically, without doing some Deus Ex Machina, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, you can't make a King Crab run at 8:12.
Yeah, yeah. But and that's why I love Johnny G, because he understands.
Yep.
So that's all I got.
Alrighty, then let's talk about player revolts.
That's how people overthrow Chad.
Last time, we were talking about dealing with or trying to identify yourself if you are a boring GM. Mm-hmm. And we left that kind of hanging with a partial topic on how to conduct a player revolt. Now, I want to start this off with a small disclaimer to say that we are not encouraging.
Let's try not to be dicks here.
Yeah, precisely. We're not encouraging everyone to be a dick the minute a game is going slightly bad.
Part of a nice player revolt is making sure it's nice. Actually needed.
Yeah,
exactly. Making sure it's actually needed, and then ideally conducting it in such a way that you're not wrecking friendships and hurting feelings and whatever. We reserve player revolts for those extreme situations when you've got a...
Basically, you reserve for the extreme situation.
It's
when
the nuclear option.
When you are bored out of your skull.
Every game, multiple games, every game in a row, this is not going to
get
better.
And the poor sop who's running them is still running them.
And if you don't stop this game, people are just going to stop showing up to the game, so you have to derail it somehow.
My number one thing I want to say on this is that any kind of conspiracy revolt, or even just, you know, say we're a gaming group and Dan's running a really boring game like he always does, and there's going to be one of us who is going to break the ice. Like Pat and John and myself, we may all be thinking the same thing, but one of us is going to step forward. The other guy's like, hey, we need to do something. And it's usually me because, you know, I'm that guy. Do not be that guy if you are unwilling to run the game.
Absolutely.
That is my thing.
Restaurant game applies to running tabletop. If you veto a rule, a suggestion, you better bring your own.
We should probably explain the restaurant game.
Okay, before we go out to eat, before we do a podcast, which is 9 times out of 10, we play the restaurant game, in which one person suggests a restaurant, and it's inevitably vetoed. But if you exercise the veto, you must provide an alternative suggestion.
And if you can't,
then we're going to the place that's originally.
Because
I don't want to eat, you know, it's like, okay, guys, let's eat at Applebee's. And then... Actually, this is a bad example because I hate Applebee's, but say John says, Applebee's.
Actually, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Well, we'll use an example. John says Applebee's. And I'm like, John, you're insane. You hate Applebee's. I hate Applebee's. I'm vetoing Applebee's. Right. And then you look at me, it's like, okay, where do you want to go? Now, you can game the system. You could be like, okay, I'm sitting here with a bunch
pizza
of veggies.
Street.
Yeah. It's just like, let's eat at Del Taco or let's eat at, you know, White Castles and fart up the sound.
I've had White Castle twice in the last 24 hours.
Oh, really?
I'm not happy about that, but I have. I hadn't had it for 6 months preceding yesterday.
Talk about the nuclear option.
I'd say his blood is like a one-way superhighway right now.
No, I'm fine digestively.
The problem in that game, or before we instituted that game, was where somebody would always say, well, I don't want to go there. Where do you want to go? Well, I don't care, just not there.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a freaking
and
suggestion.
And this is a problem that transcends restaurants and Game Master. There's always negative Nancy who, when you demand of him what he would like, has got nothing.
Yeah, and this is, like, that really applies to DMing, because as a DM, I have had players who, are like you know, we just talked about, sometimes the games die, sometimes I drop the ball, sometimes I mess it up, and the players come to me and they're like, well, we don't want this game, and we don't want what you're doing, we don't like it. I'm like, okay, not to be snot or snotty or anything like that, but who's going to run the game now? And it's just like, oh, well, you're going to run the game. We don't like what you're doing, so you're going to change everything.
Well, in our old... what the hell is wrong with me today?
You're going to law school.
My voice is starting to crack in age 22. Anyway, in our old group through like Deerbrews, probably through like 2002 through 2006, if you didn't run the game, it really didn't get off the ground.
Right.
And there was both push and pull there. One, you were a great GM when you were on.
Thank you.
Two, when you weren't
a GM, I was off.
But... you pretty much wanted to GM when you were a player.
Yeah, we talked about this before, about how GMs are control freaks. That's why GMs GM. And yeah,
and your ADHD was kind of difficult to engage when you were a player. Okay,
I have
your ADD. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have the rare one. I am ADD.
Yeah, I wouldn't call you hyperactive.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Unless I do a whole line of coke and then I'm outraged.
Right. But anyway, that just illustrates the point.
If we get to the point where a player revolt is needed.
Yeah.
Ringmaster needs his own idea.
How do you... Yeah, well, first of all, have somewhere to go with this. Come up with an alternate. Well,
first of all, have two people at your gaming table that can GM for the group.
Yeah.
Because in our case, we didn't.
Yeah.
And that's why.
That pissed me off. But
I tried and failed.
Yeah. That's why I'm... forced everyone to do
it's what I call the Yamamoto option, because in World War II, when the Allies were preparing to assassinate Yamamoto, the first thing they checked was who's going to replace him and is he worse.
Yeah.
And you need to think about that with your players and game masters. But
now,
let's say you're exercising that option. What are some ways to do it?
Well, the second thing you need, other than a GM, is you need the face man. You need the guy, usually me, who is going to actually do the deed to say, hey, dude, we really need to do something.
There's politics in any group, but in your group, there's probably one person who everybody likes without reservation.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, make him talk.
Yeah. And also, you also need to get group consensus as well, because you may really hate this game and be bored with it and rolling your eyes and stuff, but if everybody else is into it and really wants to do it, if you orchestrate a player revolt, and you can, I mean, that's just how humans and sociology works, is that if you have the wherewithal to psychologically influence your friends, then you're being kind of a douche.
Yeah.
So,
first of all, you're being a douche to begin with if you're literally manipulating them to get this done.
Yes.
The goal is to find an earnest consensus, not to trick people into running your game.
Yeah. You need a consensus. You really should get a face man that everyone likes. You should get a backup GM.
Yep.
And then, so we got these, you have the magic three. What do? Do you get in the GM's face? Do you stop the game and one day say, I can't take it anymore, this is boring? Or do you dance around the bush? Do you like, oh, we're friends and I have something to
tell you? It's really easy for us to say, well, no, Chad, you don't do either. You step up to him assertively but politely and inform him of what's going on.
Yeah, and then he
but
donkey punches
in
you.
The groups,
so what?
Maybe your GM is really easily offendable.
Yeah.
Maybe your GM is easily angered. You know.
Maybe
you
he's
have
an angry
to know
drunk.
Your people,
right, and, let
and speak to them as they are best spoken to.
Certainly, I think we would all agree. If a mature solution is possible, then a mature solution is best. But
well, there's multiple mature solutions.
So
I mean, I wouldn't even approach Dan and Chad the same way about having to do this.
Yeah. So Pat, you've been gaming for 20 years.
Yes.
Have you ever had to do a player revolt?
It's interesting. I don't have a lot of input for this because, and again, this is just my own luck. I actually have not had this happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think another big part of that, though, is my history of role-playing has been in a group mainly where there was one GM.
Yeah.
And it was, he was, you know.
And if you guys didn't like his style, there wouldn't be a group.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there were two of us that were GMs
mm-hmm.
in that group, but and they ran different games, different sessions. So we would play in ones.
Okay. So you ran two parallel.
So we had two, we would have two games.
Yeah. We never really did or do that.
Yeah.
So, and again, that's just my experience.
Did you guys game every week?
Yeah, back in high school, we pretty much game.
Oh,
almost
in
every
high
week.
School, you've got time.
Yeah, and then in high school and college, we did quite a bit. And then after college, well, even in college, it started to get fewer and fewer because we weren't in the same place. Like my friend was in Columbia, I was in Springfield, mm-hmm. and I moved to St. Louis. And
yeah, that's impossible.
You know, and you're.
I had friends both in Columbia and Springfield, and I went to SLU, and there's no way you can have a regular game.
We made a couple of us, while we were still in Springfield, we would do weekend trips up to Columbia about once a month, have a gaming weekend up in Columbia. So
that's cool.
We're able to do a lot. But anyway, back to the point.
Mm-hmm.
I never have had a player.
Back to the point. What kind of show do you think this is?
I never have actually been in a player revolt like that. But to give some advice on what you're talking about, and again, every group is different, but I think the important thing to remember is a good way to do this is something you don't want to do is you never really want to call somebody out in front of a big group and sort of, you know, put them on the spot.
Yeah. Don't give them a cause to dig their heels in and defend themselves.
Exactly. Like if you are going to do this,
everybody wants to win.
Exactly. If you are going to do this, the best way, I think, you know, it's all about diplomacy. I think mm-hmm. maybe a good way to do it would be to at the end of a session, whoever your face man is, he goes and says, "Hey, look, you know, I really think this isn't going well," or whatever. You do that so it's not in front of the group by saying, "Aha, you suck."
Yeah.
And we are no longer going to play your game, because then immediately he's on, you know, he could be on the defense and be
"Oh
my
gosh. Guys."
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, "You guys are all dicks and you don't like me." And
it depends on who. I mean, if we did that to Chad, you'd just laugh and
exactly.
forget about it in 5 minutes.
So it depends.
If we did
it
to someone who's more defensive, they wouldn't.
But I think, and I do, my personality is one that I try to avoid conflict. That's just me. So I'm all more about diplomacy than whatever else. So,
and, you know, Cal, what you're saying, I was thinking too that, you know, there are people who have groups of friends and gaming groups and whatnot who their groups are loud and rowdy and really aggressive. And if you beat around the bush and you try the diplomacy thing, then that is as bad as going to a calm group and say, you know, it's like you're approaching from a position of weakness, and you have to say, okay, my position is stronger, yours is weaker, you're just being a bad
or
GM.
They don't even
everybody's,
get it. I mean, if the volume level is a billion decibels and you squeak by politely, you might not even be heard.
And so I think that there are definitely groups out there where it's just, you know, high fives and beer and pretzels, and it's just like, Joe, you suck, get the hell out of here. And Joe's like, screw you guys. Let's see if you can do it better. Okay, who's up for the next game? You know, and I think that the big thing more than anything else is know your players.
Exactly.
But let's assume for the sake of this argument that it's not as easy as just saying, hey, Joe, you suck.
Yeah, it never is.
Yeah, because generally speaking, if you have that kind of group, you know, more power to you.
The biggest, easiest game killer is the one John, I think, mentioned earlier.
I've got a great idea for a new game.
We have rules.
Break the rule. The sacred rule of not mentioning your awesome new game idea.
Yeah.
Because in everyone's heads, this ideal game that you've all imagined is always going to be better than the actual game that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Bring it out.
Exactly. So you're playing, I don't know, whatever game. You're like, man, I just got this great idea for this Star Wars game. Instantly, whatever game you're playing is dead.
Yeah.
And that right there is a quick way. You get the GM along with the other players interested in a completely divergent idea. Mm-hmm.
But again, with that, be prepared to step up to the plate.
Absolutely.
And run that. Because you could plant this seed, this idea, and everybody's kind of going for it. And you have a boring GM and you don't GM. And everyone's like, okay, yeah, let's play this. And the GM's like, okay, give me a week. I'll get some notes on it. Well, guess what? You've gone from playing Star Trek to this really awesome D&D campaign, and it's still a boring GM.
Yeah.
So
now GMs are sometimes more comfortable in certain settings and rule sets than others. If your boy has GM'd D&D for his whole life and you put him in front of something by White Wolf, he probably won't get it.
Right.
And that it actually might be a solution to change gears and mm-hmm. switch Let's back that, to his home territory.
That's sort of the covert revolt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Death by Ice is another one.
Yeah, just don't show up.
Exactly.
That's a douche move because it's a really douche move. Leave your guy high and dry. Your GM probably got beer and pretzels for the game night.
If there's a guy GM...
He certainly cleared out his social calendar to accommodate you. Yes.
But if enough people skip enough games in a row, that game will die. You leave a couple weeks of dead space between the two games, so it looks like everyone was just busy. And then you come back and start a new game.
Yeah, yeah. Just like last weekend. I forgot my mom's birthday. You pad like, I've got a family reunion. Yeah, if you guys don't like my Cyberpunk game, just say
no,
so.
I will be
say
there
to my face.
I will be there this coming week. So.
Chad, I would be there, but I'm leaving in 2.5 weeks.
It's sad, man. And it's the exact same campaign.
Well, now that you mention it, I destroyed it last time, so maybe I shouldn't be there.
Yeah. I've got this perfect character for you to play.
Yeah, it's this AI.
Nice.
Do you have an AI? Did you put that back into the game?
They haven't gotten to it yet, and they don't know it exists.
But you made one of the player characters.
Oh, I think...
No, not one of the
players. I think somebody does.
Because that, no, they didn't know in character that my player character was an AI for months.
That's how I'm kind of playing it off, and these guys, that it's like they think that's the big reveal, that they've got it all figured out, that it's an AI.
And we probably did at one point, and then Chad
probably.
We got too close.
Oh, that's exactly what happened.
That's cool.
And, and it's still... It still is an AI, but that's not
There's
the reveal
dual reveals.
Anymore.
In the original one, it was a dual reveal. It was, one, I'm an AI. Whoa, that's crazy. Two,
here's my penis.
I want something you guys have, and I'll kill you to get it. Okay, that's a little more substantial.
Yeah, because like the MacGuffin that the team had was my little MacGuffin that I was going to use to get John in with the team. It's like, hey, you guys have this. Let's work together. And I was really naive, and John was like, no,
hey, they have this. Give it to me.
Chad just gave me all of this power, and they have what I want, and they're weak and mortal, and I can kill them.
Yep.
Why didn't I see that coming, John?
I don't know.
That you've got there.
I had been gaming with you for a while. You should have.
I should have.
That is something that I like to get into in a role-playing game where, you know, you've got a group of players, and then you have, like, one guy to sort of... You throw in this as a player character that's kind of working against the group. I think that can be a lot of fun. I've actually done it a couple times.
We do kind of have that going in our current game.
A little bit. We do. It's interesting. With the whole thing that we got going. But I think that can make it a lot of fun. If you've got somebody that can do it well and cannot be a douche about it and be,
whatever. Let me tell you
what, it can be a lot of fun.
Well, let me tell you what happened with this. You know, I'm not going to get into a gaming story. Basically, it was a lot of fun. It was a huge amount of fun.
For a little while.
Three sessions.
Yeah.
It became this Blues Brothers chase scene where we had billions of cop cars piled up, tens of thousands of clips of ammo dumped onto the city streets from these firefights. And in the end...
And that was Phil's turn.
Everyone, myself included, realized that Chad was just doing the two steps forward, one step back thing.
Yeah.
I was never going to get the chip, and... It was boring.
Yeah.
So we scrapped the game.
Yeah, it got to a point where everyone was like, and see, that's the greatest kind of player revolt. When the GM realizes it's boring and the players are like,
well, that's when you don't need a GM or a player revolt is when the GM is self-aware enough to say, wow, this game isn't working. Mm-hmm. You don't need a player revolt at that point. I mean, the player revolt
is a very experimental kind of game. So there was a lot of talking about it's like, is this working? How is this working? This is cool. Why is this cool?
You know, you could have ended that game by just giving me the MacGuffin and letting me be Skynet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that would have been fun.
I know, And you launched
so hard.
Basically, you would hold the whole world
hostage.
He's
such a cock tease.
Another method.
Yeah, I was just blowing it up. You told me to be Skynet, dude.
Yeah.
Another method for player revolt is survival of the fittest. If the current game is boring, you convince everyone to start a second game in addition to the first game.
Never thought of that or done it. But again, I've never run or played in two games at the same time. It just seems unnatural to
dirty.
Me.
Dirty.
True. Well, actually, on to what you're talking about a little bit.
Is that why you were running a second game, you jerk?
Dope.
God, everyone hates my games.
Interesting.
The Star Trek game?
Yeah.
That was not designed to usurp your game and is already dead.
I win!
I think one thing
the
that
fittest
you can
survive.
Do,
yes.
along those lines, what Dan just said, a little bit different tack. The players, if you agree, what you can do is basically you kind of going against the GM, just you know, he's got, if he's got a clearly established plot line, you just don't do it. You can ignore it and do your own thing. You can like, you can sort of go as a group, you can sort of go 90 degrees from that. It's like, if it's,
especially if the it's GM obvious that,
okay, we have to go find Mr. X and do this, and you can sort of go off. It might
some
not
GMs
work,
love
that,
some
that
GMs hate that, and on another axis of that graph, some GMs can do it and some GMs can't do it.
Yeah,
that,
you like I would take that and totally run with
right,
it.
I'd like, you would not have any problem with that, but some people that really get, and I think this will come into some of the other styles, like with those, if you get really railroaded into what you have to and want to do, when you start throwing in 90 degree curves like that, it's just going to be like, holy crap, I don't know what to do. And
it's not in my $8 D&D module.
Exactly. Yeah. GM will give up. He'll just like, he'll throw his hands up and say, I quit.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know. I don't think that's, well.
Now, what about.
It's certainly a way, but I don't know.
No, it is a way, but.
Yeah. What about just one guy, doesn't get a group consensus, but the group's kind of bored. One guy just stands up in the middle of the game, puts his arm around the GM and says, sorry, dude, I can't do this anymore. This is just awful. It's just really bad, and I don't mean to insult.
Dick move.
See, that's like
that's like calling out one of your fielders in the middle of an inning. I mean, they better have had a heart attack and dropped a can of corn and cost you the series before you do that, or else you are going down as a douchebag manager.
I did that to Phil.
Even
once.
All these little douche moves we're talking about. I mean, part of the motivation behind them is you have to accomplish something that's ugly, and you cannot accomplish it. Got to break eggs and make an omelet. I mean, cannot accomplish it. Everyone's doing the drinking game. You have to drink right there, but you cannot accomplish it without.
No, I thought the Fear the Boot saying was you can't make an omelet without killing some people.
That was any time I use a metaphor, awesome I thought omelet. Was on the drinking game.
Oh, okay.
But the point being, though, you've got to hurt. This is an ugly thing. All right. It's going to be nearly impossible to not hurt somebody's feelings in some way. What you're trying to do is to fix the problem while doing as little damage as possible. And if you just kind of walk, so like, man, your game blows.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it depends on the group.
You didn't find a consensus. You didn't present it tactfully. That's the exactly wrong way to do
it. Now, having said that, if you do enough behind the scenes manipulation, quite frankly, people are not as stupid as most manipulators think.
Yeah.
They pretty quickly figure out what's going on, connect the dots, and they may not have enough to prove it, but they have enough for their feelings to be hurt, and you're not getting away with it.
Yeah.
And so you don't, I'm not suggesting, be all coy, because you'll get away with it every time. But
pretty much, I think the best move that any group can make, any style can make, is if the game is kind of boring, you know, consistently, you know, everything we're talking about, before the game, you throw around some emails like, hey, this game's a little slow. Do you feel the same way? And if 9 out of the 10 responses come back, it's like, yeah, this is a little slow.
And keep the GM in on the discussion or else.
No, you don't put the GM in on the discussion because you're just trying to take a consensus. Like, you could just be bored, but everyone else is having a good time. So it's like, okay, it's just me. I'll just play along until the next campaign or whatever. Unless it's a 20-year campaign, and then perhaps you'd find a new group.
I still would keep the GM in on that discussion, whether I was a player or the GM himself.
Say the emails go out, and they all come back. It's like, yes. It's like, okay, listen, guys, next game, let's just end it. And then you go to the game, you tell the GMs, like, listen, we're just not having fun with the campaign. You don't even lay it on him like, we're not having fun with your campaign. You say soft words.
It's like, not always the poor guy's fault.
No.
I mean, I've seen players kill campaigns at least as often as I've seen GMs do it themselves.
Oh, we have. World of Warcraft discussions have killed campaigns for us.
Yep.
So.
Well, and I think the best advice of all is don't be there in the first place. That if you know someone is a habitually bad GM, is super sensitive to any kind of feedback, this is headed for disaster. Don't give this guy the GM stick in the first place.
Yeah. I was gonna say that guy shouldn't be GMing in the first place. I mean, you gotta be kind of thick-skinned. It's just like anything. You're a performer on a stage. I mean, you can't have stage fright and get up in front of people and perform.
Yeah,
that's
really
what
GMing
is.
I get stage fright at Wrigley Field because there's no stalls.
Well, you know, hey, we all have that issue, but in and of itself, if you're gonna take up that GM mantle, you know, you really kind of need some thick skin in the first place. And
yeah,
does Wrigley Field have no stalls?
Wrigley Field has troughs. I you not.
Oh, I stand at the end and pee in. That's
wait for the. I know they have that.
John, does everyone have to take a drink?
No.
Yes.
Cubs fans do because they want to.
You just dropped the S-bomb.
What?
Yeah, you did.
I bleep you not, but anyway.
Whatever. Okay. Oh, yeah. I did say that.
I can't stand like movie theaters this whole time. They don't have the urinal dividers. But when you say they don't have stalls, you mean they don't have any? Like if you.
No. They have bathroom stalls with. with flush toilets in them that you sit down on.
I was gonna say, like, does this like a prison block where it's just like
no? The urinals are they are metal
with the
metal peaches.
Right. Okay. I thought you meant with the actual sit down toilets. You're just like sitting there out in the open.
No.
Like, wow, that's dehumanizing.
Oh man.
No, the whole experience really feels extremely dehumanizing.
All right. Well, do you guys have anything else on Player Revolt?
No, not really.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in then, and we will catch you next time. And over the next week or two, we should be dropping the first show of our new podcast, Brain On.
Yes.
So be sure to be watching the feed for that. And probably next episode, if we've got a show up, we'll plug that directly and put a link to it in the show notes. So we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.